From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Randall White. It was a big week in California politics, big, with a nationally watched primary election on Tuesday and state lawmakers working to seal the deal on a California budget complete with a rarely used provision to protect money set aside for education. Capital Public Radio's political guru, or I guess his official title is Capital Bureau Chief, Ben Adler, is here to fill in the details. Have you caught up on your sleep yet, Ben? It's been a busy week for you.
Well, it's all for our listeners.
Yes, of course. The word budget can put people to sleep within seconds.
Well, I can use the help.
But for you, Ben, you light up. That's because you know the drama behind the deal-making at the Capitol and what's at stake. Help us all understand some of the key aspects of this year's budget negotiations that won't put us to sleep.
Well, I mean, when you really come down to it, it's about you know, which programs are going to get more money and why that matters. So, for example, my understanding is that there will be some sort of announcement this morning from the governor and the assembly speaker and the leader of the state Senate that there is, you know, about a budget deal. I don't know if they're going to say use the phrase there is a deal, but they're going to make an announcement about a three-party budget deal. And while I don't know really any details about it, everyone's being very tight-lipped. One thing that I am able to report is that there's going to be more money for the UC and CSU systems above what the governor proposed in his May revise last month. So why does that matter, right? Well, because the universities are saying they would use that money to admit more students. And so that's an example of why, even though the budget can be dry, it's still very important in the lives of many Californians.
Yeah, and the governor had been really specific about the schools needing to, you know, tighten their belts and that they're not going to get more money. But now it sounds like maybe they will.
Well, it is the governor's last year. It is a big priority of legislative Democrats. And the governor's objection isn't to the universities educating more students. His objections have been to the way that the universities, and particularly the University of California Office of the President, have managed their money. And this has been an ongoing feud between the governor and UC President Janet Napolitano for years. And the governor has been reticent to give more money to the systems without seeing them try to come up with savings internally and to streamline processes that that he believes don't really do much to help students. The universities say they've, you know, done a lot of cutting and a lot of streamlining, and they've done what they can, and that if the state gives them more money, it is going to go into admitting more students. And so perhaps they were able to, you know, I know the UC met a lot of the obligations, or there was an audit last year, a state audit that was blistering toward the UC Office of the President. And the UC met the recommendations, many of them. And so maybe the governor is more comfortable giving money. And I think the governor has always felt that the CSU, he's felt a little more positively toward the CSU than the UC. And so we'll see what happens with the CSU and whether it fares as well or perhaps better than the UC.
And just briefly, when you said three-party budget deal, you meant Democrats, Republicans, and the governor?
No, not in this bold new post-majority vote budget world. So it used to be that, you know, when Governor Schwarzenegger was in power, it took a two-thirds vote of each chamber of the legislature and the governor to get a budget deal. Well, on the same day voters elected Jerry Brown back in 2010, they also approved Proposition 25, which reduced the threshold in the legislature required for a budget and budget trailer bills, which are the accompanying pieces of legislation that really make policy, from two-thirds to majority. And so with all the talk about everything that Jerry Brown has done to balance the budget and get the state in fiscal shape, even the governor would acknowledge that his job was made monumentally easier, not just from the improving economy, not just from voters approving tax increases in 2012, but from that ballot measure that no longer required him to negotiate every year on every piece of every budget deal with Republicans. So the deal that we expect to be announced today, or at least referred to today, will involve Governor Brown, Assembly Speaker Anthony Rendon, and the new leader of the state Senate, President Pro Tem Tony Atkins.
I see. Why does the governor favor the CSU system over the UC system?
You know, I think he has had there's a couple things. One is the UC has constitutional independence under the state constitution. So there's a limit to what the governor and state lawmakers can make them do. They have the power of the purse, and that is really the one leverage point that they have over the UC, and so I think the governor has sought to use it. With the CSU, the legislature can just pass laws that require the CSU to do things, and so I think historically there's been less of a gulf between the CSU and the governor's office, or and the legislature in general.
For the first time in a decade, Ben, Governor Brown and legislative Democrats are expected to approve a budget that includes an obscure provision that guarantees future minimum funding levels for schools and community colleges, but at the expense of everything else. Can you explain what it is and why that matters?
It's going to be tricky, but I will
wonky,
do
right?
Yeah, it is very wonky. It is also important, as a lot of things are with the budget. And what we're talking about is Proposition 98. That's the California Constitution school funding minimum guarantee that voters passed in 1988. And it roughly sets aside 40% of the budget. That is the easiest way of explaining it, and nobody, about three people in the state, can explain it in more depth than that. And that's not really an exaggeration. But what happens is each year the state needs to kind of estimate how much money is owed to schools and community colleges through Proposition 98. Anytime you make budget estimates based on revenue projections, it's going to be off. In some way, right? It's, you know, money comes in at different rates during the year than you expect. And so you end up either overpaying or underpaying what schools and community colleges are supposed to get. How you true that up is always really tricky. And so there's something called Proposition 98 certification, where you basically certify funding levels and you can't go below that without a two-thirds vote of the legislature to suspend Prop 98. Now, why does this all matter? Let's say there's a recession. If the Prop 98 funding level is locked in, that means all the squeezing, absent a two-thirds vote of the legislature agreeing to suspend Prop 98, all the budget squeezing and budget cuts would have to come from non-school programs. And there's not always a lot of room to cut those programs. Mm. And that's why it matters. So Prop 98 hasn't been certified in a decade, and it's going to be certified in this budget deal, setting base levels for funding so that, let's say, the economy plummets off a cliff next year. Could happen. We're at the longest recession, I think, in decades. Then a lot of the cuts are going to be coming to things that might be getting programs, getting more money right now, the UCs, CSU, potentially Medi-Cal and other programs. Now, there is, of course, the rainy day fund and the budget reserve that voters approved in 2014. It's going to get filled up to its constitutional max, so a modest recession may not require too many cuts. But we all remember the recession that happened last time around, and nobody is arguing that the rainy day fund would be sufficient to stave off cuts in that situation.
Now, do they certify under Prop 98 every year or just occasionally?
They're supposed to certify every year. In point of fact, they haven't in a decade.
I'm speaking with Cap Radio's Ben Adler about the week in California politics, and now we've had a few days to digest this week's primary results. What stands out to you, Ben, as you look back at the decisions that were made by voters?
Yeah, by voters. Well, I mean, I guess you could say the polls were right. The polls in the governor's race showing, especially toward the end, that showed John Cox poking his head into second place and creating some distance between him and former Los Angeles Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa and his Republican rival, Assemblyman Travis Allen. And we were all wondering whether Villaraigosa would be able to make up that gap in voters who don't typically turn out and might not be measured in polls, Latinos generally, and particularly from L.A. County and the Central Valley. Well, he wasn't able to make that gap up. And, you know, at last check, he wasn't all that far ahead of Travis Allen. He's in third place, but not that far ahead of fourth place. And this despite an outside group run by charter schools and funded by a handful of billionaires like Netflix founder Reed Hastings and Michael Bloomberg, the former mayor of New York City. I mean, there was $20 million spent on ads, mostly to boost Villaraigosa, which didn't seem to really boost him very much, and some to attack John Cox and attack Gavin Newsom didn't really seem to take them down very much. It's somewhat reminiscent of Meg Whitman in 2010 spending a gajillion dollars of her own money, and that's a technical term, to kind of boost herself and attack Jerry Brown, and she wasn't able to get across the finish line. So everyone says you need a lot of money in politics, and Gavin Newsom did have a lot of money, both from major donors and from smaller donors. But money doesn't guarantee anything. No, in the California governor's race.
And we saw that in several instances in this election where the amount of money spent by the candidate did not reflect how they ended up doing at the end.
I guess it's refreshing in a way.
Yeah. You spoke with both Gavin Newsom and John Cox this week. How is the campaign starting to shape up? Because we're full on in general election mode for them, right?
They sure didn't waste much time sounding general election campaign themes. And what's interesting is a lot of times once the primary is over, candidates tend to move to the center. I haven't seen any evidence of I've seen maybe a little bit of Gavin Newsom trying to move to the center. I mean, in his speech on election night Tuesday, he didn't utter the phrase single payer health care. He mentioned guaranteed access for healthcare, something along those lines. So that was a something different, I guess. You could maybe call it a move to the center. But looming over this race is President Trump. And Gavin Newsom wants to tie John Cox to President Trump. And Cox wants to say, you know, well, actually, let me play a clip of my interview with John Cox about what he thinks about being tied to Gavin Newsom's efforts to basically, you know, a noun, a verb, John Cox and President Trump.
I don't want to fight with Washington. I don't think that's productive on any scale. This whole thing of demonizing Donald Trump gets him a lot of good copy and gets some angry partisans to attend his rallies, but I don't think it does much for the average working Californian who's just trying to feed their family and save a little money for retirement or put their kids through school. That's what we ought to be talking about. How can we make life better here? Being at war with Donald Trump isn't going to make anybody's life better.
So I think Gavin Newsom is going to continue to try to tie John Cox to Donald Trump. Here is what Gavin Newsom told reporters at the San Francisco Ferry Building as he stopped in to get a quick lunch on Wednesday.
I'd run, not walk away from the brand of being a Trump Republican. My opponents run towards that. He's going to have to explain why he supports offshore oil drilling, why he supports literally children being ripped from the arms of their mothers and fathers at the border, why he supports repealing our clean air and clean water regulations, why he wants to attack our diverse communities and our dreamers and build a wall, which is really a monument to stupidity, on the southern border. He's going to have to defend all of those things, including the repeal of the ACA and addressing the ongoing assault on our values. That's not a place I want to be. We're not in that position. I'm arguing for something very different. And this is going to be a very, I think, easy race to explain to folks.
So this is not going to be a rush to the center, as can sometimes happen in general elections.
There's 5 months. There's plenty of time for them to rush to the center if they choose. But I think right now we're seeing both of them want to rile up their bases. Newsom, I think, figures that that's a surefire strategy to win in California for a Democrat because there are so many more Democrats than Republicans. Cox is counting on a couple of things. One is that voters are really frustrated with the policies coming out of Sacramento, the gas tax increase being one. We saw Josh Newman, the state senator, get recalled by a pretty wide margin this week. And the gas tax, his vote for the gas tax was a central part of that campaign. So backers of the money going to transportation projects really have their work cut out for them. And they're going to need to spend a lot of money to try to change voter sentiment this fall. And I just think that Cox is also counting on just a real, I mean, one of the big goals, if not of Cox, who I think would say he wants to win the governor's race, but of a lot of people who supported him, like President Trump and House Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy, is they need their base to turn out to hold on to some of these competitive congressional seats. And the way to do it isn't necessarily for John Cox to tack center. It's going to be for Cox to try to lead the Republican ticket as governor and say, hey, I support Donald Trump. And the policies in Sacramento that Democrats have been pushing, from sanctuary state to gas tax, are really out of step with your values. And so come on out and vote. And while you're at it, vote for your member of Congress.
Ben, you mentioned that Villaraigosa got a little cash infusion at the end there. Those donors, Villaraigosa donors, will they be all in for Newsom now?
Well, I don't know if his major donors are going to be in for Newsom, although if they do, that might be one way to start making up for some sore feelings. But Villaraigosa did wholeheartedly support Gavin Newsom on election night, and Newsom thanked him warmly the next day when he spoke with reporters. So it was a straight endorsement. I haven't noticed, and perhaps I've missed it. I've been a bit preoccupied since the election with the budget, but I haven't noticed Travis Allen endorse John Cox yet. And there was a lot of vitriol between them in the campaign. I mean, Allen called, Cox a beta male for, in Allen's mind, copying all of Allen's positions on things, something that Cox really pushes back on, disagrees with, whether that's true or not. So there seemed to be more anger between the two of them than there was between Newsom and Villaraigosa, at least publicly. And Newsom and Villaraigosa have made up publicly since the election.
All right. Capitol Bureau Chief Ben Adler, I'm sure we'll hear from you during All Things Considered tonight regarding the budget. So you got a lot of work ahead of you for the day. Thanks for being on Insight this morning.
You just promised something that I don't know. No, I mean, we'll definitely have budget coverage on All Things Considered today, for sure.
All right, Ben, thanks a lot.
Okay, take care.
You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Capital Public Radio.